Okay, we are up to Mishnah Yud Beit, Yud Gimel. Actually, we ended off last week discussing the famous statement of Hillel that we should be like the students of Aaron HaKohen, Ohev Shalom, Virodev Shalom, running peace and seeking after peace and loving all people. Ohevet Habriyot, meaning Jew and non-Jew, or believe in the animal kingdom. Ohevet Habriyot means all creations. We said Yisrael are the Jews. Adam means all of humanity, and Briot means all of creation. Umakarvam Latorah. By the way, that's interesting because if you hold Briot means non-Jew and even beyond the you know into the animal kingdom, so what does it mean to bring them closer onto Torah? So that's I just thought of this now. I would assume first for non-Jews, of course, we're talking on the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach that they're. You know, whether it's an obligation, that's an interesting question. What's the Jewish responsibility to get non-Jews to observe the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach? It's clearly that that's our expectation, but you don't really see that in rabbinic literature that we have in the same way we don't go out and convert non-Jews. That's sort of not the way it's been for the last like couple thousand years. Doesn't seem that there's really a mission to go out and get non-Jews to observe the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. If I'm not mistaken, but I may be, the Lubavitcher Rebbe talked about that. He was into that, but I don't know exactly. But that would be an idea, of course, bringing non-Jews closer to Torah doesn't mean to Torah in Targ Mitzvah, the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, and probably the animal kingdom even means the way, you know, Kilaim, the way we have to respect the environment and the way that we're not allowed to crossbreed animals, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, Torah is a universal, you know, system. It affects the entire world. It affects the balance of nature. That too is part of Torah. Okay. Mishnah Yud Gimel, Hu Haya Omer. So first of all, we have here something interesting. This is the first time we have one rabbi saying more than, getting more than one Mishnah. Like everybody up to now, first nine or really, really probably 11 rabbis who are mentioned, beginner, Anshei Knesset Agdol, Yishmaya, Talion, Yossi ben Yoezer, Yossi, you know, all the Zugot, everybody gets one Mishnah, basically with three teachings. And here we're going to have three Mishnayot of Hillel, and then we're going to pick up with Hillel again in the second parak. So even if you don't know anything, the one thing you realize, Hillel must be a pretty important rabbi. If the only thing you have in your library you've ever learned is Pirkei Avot, you'll pick up on the fact that there's something special about Hillel. Mishnah doesn't say what it is. We of course all know. Of course there is something special about Hillel. But it is interesting. He gets three Mishnayot here. It's also even more fascinating is this is one of the very, very few Mishnayot that's in Aramaic. Huay Omer Negat Shema Abad Shema, Delo Mosif Yasif, Delo Yalif Katalachayav, Nishtamesh B'Tagachalaf. We'll come back to the meaning of that in a moment. It's for sure the only Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, that's in Aramaic. I tried to do a quick search. What popped into my mind is, and it's interesting, and I'll talk about it for a minute because I believe it ties into Yom Yerushalayim. There is another Mishnah in Masechet Sota that is also in Aramaic. There may be a couple more. I don't recall, and I couldn't find if anybody knows other Mishnayot. But I'll read it, really, because it's Yom Yerushalayim. Now, why would the Mishnah be in Aramaic? Well, why don't we start there? The Mishnah, of course, is in Hebrew. The Mishnah is Hebrew for a very simple reason, although maybe it's not as simple as it sounds. The simple reason is because it was written in the land of Israel. And the Mishnah is written, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the edits it, as I mentioned, I think, I don't know if I mentioned here, but it's not, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi didn't edit the Mishnah like on his own. This was a 50-year process. It began already with Rabbi Akiva, or the students of Rabbi Akiva. For sure, after the Bar Kokhba revolt, there was a realization that the Torah Sheba Alpeh had to be written down. But there were so much to edit and winnow down. You know, the Mishnah represents less than 10% of the teachings of the rabbis of that time. You know, when you learn Gemara, you hear, you know, there's Braita, Tosefta, all these other things we don't pay much attention to, which the Gemara does. It uses words Tan or Tanya or Tana Rabbanan. Each one has a specific meaning. The Mishnah was extremely precise. The Gemara, we know how they quote people. They have to quote exact names, who he said it from. It's very important. how exacting they were. So the Mishnah really only represents a very, very, very small fraction of rabbinic teaching at the time. And it took many, many years to put it together. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is the final editor. They're in the year 220. So it's in Hebrew, it's in Israel. Although I seem to recall a few years ago, Netanyahu and the Pope had a machloket. Netanyahu claimed that Hebrew has been spoken in this land, you know, I wanted the Zionist ethos, whatever, but Hebrew, and the Pope said that the Pope apparently had made a same of Aramaic being spoken, and Netanyahu said, no, we were speaking Hebrew here for 1,000 years, and apparently the scholars all say the Pope was right, that the spoken language of the people, even in the land of Israel, at the time of the temple, end of the Second Temple period, was actually Aramaic. Nonetheless, the rabbis spoke, when they recorded information, they spoke in Hebrew. And the Mishnah representing Eretz Yisrael, of course, has to be in Hebrew. Now, the truth of the matter is, and this is something most people do not know at all, and I really have to thank Rabbi Pinchas Heyman, who was the one who first pointed it out to me a number of years ago. Actually, not 85 to 90% of the sayings of the rabbis in the Gemara are also in Hebrew. Amar Rav Halacha Kishmo. Amar, you know, when the rabbis spoke, or when there was, they probably spoke in Aramaic, but when it was written down in the Gemara, it was written in Hebrew. So why does everybody say the Gemara is in Aramaic? Because the Gemara is a discussion of what the rabbi said. So the question, the answer, it's like what we would do. We're reading here Pirkei Avot. So I read the text in Hebrew, very little in Hebrew, but okay, we read a little text in Hebrew, and we discuss it in English. The rabbis, the language, the permanent language of the Jewish people is always Hebrew. That's the language we have to speak. If you want anything for all time, so the rabbis in the Gemara are also in Hebrew. The discussion, when people talk to each other, they speak in the language in which they speak. So the Gemara is these wide-ranging discussions, so that's all in Aramaic. But if you look, the next time you open up a Gemara, take a look, unless it's telling a story, whenever they quote an Amora living in Babel, his language, his one sentence that he says, or a sentence and a half, is going to be in Hebrew. Discussions in Aramaic. So it's not just the Mishnah that's in Hebrew. Really, much of the Gemara is in Hebrew. Just the sayings of the Gemara, the teaching, the discussions in Aramaic. So the question is, though, what is this Mishnah doing in Aramaic? So it's not 1,000% clear. Unfortunately, don't talk about it too much. Some say he may have said it. Hillel may have taught this Mishnah when he lived in Babel. Sort of goes against what I just said. We know Hillel came from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. I don't know if people, you know, you remember the famous story, I guess, how he got appointed as the Nasi, as the leader, was because Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos one year. And by the way, this upcoming year, 2021, next Pesach, the first Seder is on Saturday night, for those who haven't checked their calendars yet. So we're going to have the first Seder on Moshe Shabbos. That's always interesting and fun. A backwards three-day Yontif, as I like to say, for those who don't live in Yerushalayim yet, haven't made Aliyah despite Yom Yerushalayim. Anyways, Hillel comes, and remember, in the time of the Mishnah, they didn't have a fixed calendar, and they manipulated the calendar. Absolutely, that was the whole fight, Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, and they didn't want. We also manipulated our calendar today, but it's a fixed manipulation. So Lo Adu Rosh, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, is never a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. That's not astronomically true. You can have the new moon, and it's going to be, should be on a Sunday, but we don't observe Rosh Hashanah then. We wait, we push it off. So we did manipulate the calendar, but it's a fixed way. There they manipulated. So they didn't, I'm sure it was very, very rare. People don't like when Shabbos, Erev Pesach. But it happens once in a while. There's nothing you can do. It happened. So they didn't know, the sages didn't know if they could bring the Korban Pesach. And because a private korban, you're not allowed to bring on Shabbat. A public korban, the korban tamid, for all of Kol Yisrael, you can bring on Shabbat. So the korban Pesach is sort of this funny thing in the middle. It's really a private korban. because we each bring it individually or with our families, but it's the entire public. It's for Klal Yisrael. It's the founding of the Jewish nation. It's a little bit unclear whether you brought it on Shabbos. And the rabbis didn't know, the Bnei B'Teira didn't know what they were supposed to do. And along comes Hillel, this outsider, and he has a tradition, even though he lived in Babel, B'Moado, it has to be brought in his time. And they said, oh, this guy, he's very special, and they appointed him as the Nasi. That's what the Gemara Imsachim talks about. So it could be he taught this Mishnah when he was in Babel, and he spoke Aramaic, and it was just brought in the original language. The other reason, what I think was the Tosfot Yontif, I think, was the one who pointed out it's in Aramaic because it's a very important Mishnah. It's also very fascinating. This Mishnah is like more important than any other Mishnah, and it's in Aramaic. And because we wanted everybody to understand, you're not supposed to pray in Aramaic. The angels don't understand Aramaic. I don't know whatever that means. The Mishnah in Sota, and we're going to quote just a couple chapters after, says you're allowed to daven in any language in theory. You know, that was a big debate in the Reform movement, davening in English, German, French, whatever. Theoretically, you're allowed to daven in any language, but that's not acceptable in today's Orthodox world, for better or worse. If you got up in shul and you started saying a prayer in English, they'd throw you out. I don't know. But we do have a few things. So extra prayer. So what do we say in Aramaic? It's like English at the time. Aramaic, Yikum Purkan. Why is Yikum Purkan in Aramaic? Halachmanya is in Aramaic. Why are these things in Aramaic? Because these were things added on later, speaking to the people as a whole. Bir Chametz is in Aramaic, because you have to understand Bir Chametz. You, of course, should understand your tefillah, but halachically speaking, if you daven and you don't understand the words, and you know you're standing before God and you're praying to God, but you don't really know what you're saying, it's not ideal, but you fulfilled your obligation. But if you burn your chametz, you nullify your chametz, but you don't know what you're saying, you mumble some words in Aramaic, you did not nullify your chametz. You don't know what you did. So things that were very important for halach manya, we're inviting guests to come to our Seder. So how can you invite them in the language you don't understand? You have to talk to people. So Yikum Purkan was in Aramaic, because Yikum Purkan blesses the leaders. Rosh Galuta, it blesses all the people. So it's the prayer for the government. You will have occasionally, you go to a modern Orthodox shul, occasionally they'll say the prayer for the government in English. God in heaven, because it's not really part of the tefillah. So certain extra things, in a sense, got put into the language of the people. And the Hebrew, many people did not understand Hebrew. Or Brich Shmei, yeah, I see. So Brich Shmei is a Kabbalistic piece. The Zohar is all in Aramaic. I don't know anything from the Zohar, but I think the entire Zohar is in Aramaic. Joel Hecker from Toronto, those of you who know him, I think, did some of the translation from Yale University. I think Yale University Press, a new translation of the Zohar. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he didn't write the Zohar, but that's okay. We won't go there now. But and by the way, many people don't say Brich Shmei. I think the German Jews don't say it. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, I think, felt it was forbidden to say it. We say it. That's the custom of the Jewish people. Because there were certain hesitations. And it's not really part of our tefillah, but yes, it means it was thrown in. Anyway, so it was felt to be very important. But I just wanted to point out, because it's Yom Yerushalayim, the other Mishnah that's in Aramaic. So this is the end of Sota. We actually made reference to the first part of this Mishnah a few weeks ago. This is the Mishnah talked about when this person died. This was the end of that. When Rabban Gamliel died, that was the end of the honor for Torah. So the Mishnah here at the end of Sota, of all places, has, maybe it's connected, what's going to be in the Messianic era. So first the Mishnah says, Rabbi Elezer Hagadol Omer, Rabbi Elezer the Great. It's interesting, he's rarely known. Rabbi Elezer ben Hyrcanus, that's when it was excommunicated, the famous Rabbi Elezer. Every once in a while, they refer to him as Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. In the famous story of Tanur Shalachnai, when he's excommunicated, the last line of that story, which most people don't know, you don't learn the story all the way to the end, is Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol says that it's very important, the most important idea in the Torah, repeated most often, is not to oppress a stranger. 36 times it says in Torah, And Tosfot says it may be 46 times, and that's how the Gemara ends. So it, and a quote says, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. That's clearly the editors of the Gemara telling you that what they did to Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was oppression. That was because the last teaching Gemara is not to oppress the stranger. And they don't just quote him as Rabbi Eliezer, they quote him as Rabbi Eliezer the Great. So that's an editorial comment on that piece after he's excommunicated, etc. But here the mission says, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Miyom Shachar Beit HaMikdash, Shrucha feima lemeve kisafaria, bisafaria kechazanya, bisafaria kamadar. Basically, he said, nobody has the position that is worthy to them. People are much more talented. He says, the great people, the great, people will teach in kindergarten. Not the, I don't know, it doesn't sound nice. It's important to teach in kindergarten. But you had, after the Holocaust, you had people who survived the Holocaust who knew Shas inside out, backwards and forward. And they taught grade four in some school that, like, the kids were running around like wild animals. It's like, it's hurtful to see. I think now back of some of my teachers, some of my teachers were people who survived the war, who knew Shas when they, they came to America, Canada, they needed a job. And they got a job teaching grade six. And so that's sort of what the Mishnah says. When the temple was destroyed, life will be upended. So people won't, everybody knows that an immigrant comes, he's a medical doctor, but he can't get a license in the country he's in. So he drives a cab. Everybody knows stories like that. So that's what the Mishnah says. Won't go through the whole thing. And then the Mishnah says, the ikvat Mashiach, in the era of the Mashiach, Rabbi Shkof from Associated. I was thinking, he's before my time. I'm not that old, right. Rav Shimon Shkof's son, yes. So in the days of the Mashiach, this is one of the Gemaras of what's going to be in the Mashiach. We don't know. The Rambam said, we don't know what's going to be in the Mashiach. But this is the rabbis expressing what the Messianic era will look like. It sort of looks like our era, but it also looks like an era you don't really want to live in. Which was the statement of one of the rabbis in Talmud said, I don't want to be around when the Mashiach comes. There's going to be too much upheaval, perhaps war, Gog and Magog, all these things. Let somebody else live in the Messianic time. I'll live before or after. Anyway, so chutzpah yiske. There'll be a lot of chutzpah. People will be extremely chutzpahdik in the Messianic era. Biyoker yamir, inflation. Yoker yamir, there'll be tons of inflation. There'll be lots of grapes, lots of wine, but nobody can afford to get wine. The kingdom, the leaders, the government will be heretics. Nobody gives rebuke. Nobody, people do what they want and nobody cares. They act like immoral people. Beit Vad, the Beit Vad is the meeting place, a moed, right? Our holidays, Eile Moedei Hashem. A moed means a meeting place. That's a Beit Vad is a place, because a moed is God in the, I always like to say a moed is God and the Jewish people meeting in history. Shabbat predates the existence of man. It has a human component, the social justice, because we were slaves in Egypt. But Shabbat begins with no humanity. It's creation. It's about God. A moed, Yom Tov, is about Jewish people in history. It's a meeting place of God and the Jewish people in history. So a Beit Vav, a meeting place, a shul, where Jews come together. Beit Vav means a holy place. We come together. Yel lesnut will turn into a house of prostitution. Galil Yecharev, the north, the Galil will be destroyed. Gavlan Yisham, the Gavlan, let's say it's also another place, or the border, some say refers to the borders, will be overrun. Gavlan Yisham, Banshe Gvul Yisovumi earlier, the border patrol will have to go from place to place. Bechachmat Sofrim Tisrach, the wisdom of the scribes will be impure, will become all smelly, tisrach. It will be, nobody will care about the wisdom. Those who fear God will look down on those who fear sin. And truth will be hard to find. There'll be very little truth in words. A little bit of a depressing Mishnah. It switches, and you notice from Hebrew to English, from Aramaic to Hebrew. But I just quote the Mishnah. I think in the honor of Yom Yerushalayim, it's the religious Zionist in me, and of course my education, that we believe that or we hope there was a whole debate, you know, with the tefillah or the prayer for the government of Israel. So, you know, Reshit Smichat Gulatenu, you know, is the beginning of, you know, Shetahei Reshit it is. I don't know, you know, there basically, there was basically a fundamental dispute in religious Zionism. I mean, an ideological dispute, not a personal dispute. An ideological dispute is, do we view Israel as the beginning of the Messianic era? That's the view of Rav Kook, of course, and many other people. And the view of Rav Soloveitchik is, and Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Yaakov Reines, the founder of the Mizrahi movement, is we don't see Israel, maybe we do, but that's not the point of Israel, is not, we don't know from the Messiah, we don't know when he's coming, we don't know when the redemption is. It's not, the value of the state of Israel has nothing to do with the beginning of the Gula, nothing to do with the redemption. It's a play, there's a mitzvah to live in Israel, to set up a government, a state. These are all wonderful things in the Torah. The Torah doesn't mention one word about the Mashiach. There's no, Rabbi Soloveitchik got very, a lot of people didn't like the Messianic overtones. It's very dangerous at times. It leads to political decisions divorced from reality. But that's the fundamental dispute in religious Zionism. Do we see the state of Israel as the beginning of our redemption or not? So the prayer for the state of Israel, and I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity of who wrote the prayer. You know, there have been a lot of articles written in recent years. Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi at the time, of course, and they say he wrote it, but the story is him and Shai Agnon, that he got the help of Shai Agnon to write it. But that opening expression, Avinu Shebashamayim, Tzur Yisrael V'Golo, Bereichem Medinat Yisrael, great. We all say it. I say it too. But there was dispute. Some people say shit. Hey, Rishit Gulateinu, don't like it. But that reflects only one sort of ideology about why it's important to be in Israel. Rav Soloveitchik, of course, he wrote it before Yom Yerushalayim in 1956. He didn't write it. He spoke it. It's Rabbi Soloveitchik's famous speech at Yeshiva University in 1956 on Yom HaTzmut, which became called Odi Dofek, the six knocks of God. Why the state of Israel is so important, WDA no hefker, and anti-Semitism, all the wonderful things had nothing to do with the coming of the Mashiach. Wasn't Rav Kook saw things in a very different light. Okay, Seder. There generally is a very, as we all know, a downplaying of the Messianic. Judaism doesn't like to talk about it because we know all the dangers. Every time people talk about Mashiach, usually it ends in disaster. So I guess that makes it pretty clear which of the two sides of religious Zionism I sort of... you know, my sympathies lay, if I could say that. We hope Shetei Rishit Smukakulotenu, but okay. But I'll tell you, Rav Hershel Schechter, my Rebbe, when I was in Yeshiva University, I was in Shir for 4 years before he was, you know, world famous. And I really owe him so much of my learning, really, I gained so much from his Shir. Rav Schechter had the view, unlike his Rebbe, unlike Rabbi Soloveitchik, that we celebrate Yom HaTzmud only because it's Reshit Smichat Gulateinu. If you do not believe that the creation of the state of Israel and what's Geulateinu, by the way, that's an interesting thing. I know we're sort of off of Perkei Avot. I hope you'll forgive me a little bit. We'll come back to it on Yom Yerushalayim. So what's Geulateinu? So he quotes the Ramban's introduction to Sefer Shemot. The Ramban says in rabbinic literature, Sefer Shemot is known as Sefer HaGula, the book of redemption. The Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. But the story doesn't end. Shemot doesn't end with Egypt. It goes to Har Sinai. Okay? So the redemption ends at Mount Sinai. But we all know Shemot doesn't end there either. If I was editing the Chumash, I would have put from Truman to Tzava in Vayikra, and I would have moved Kedoshim, Emor, Bahar, Bechukotah into Shemot, because it fits with the theme, you know, the laws, love your neighbor. So that's like after Mishpatim, Emor fits very beautifully. And Trumat Tetzava, Vayakob Pekude, I throw it into Vayikra. But obviously I wasn't the editor, Baruch Hashem, of the Torah. So what's the Mishkan doing in Sefer Shemot? So the Ramban explains, Geula means the building of a tabernacle to God. The Mishkan is, that's the Sof Geula. There's the three-stage process, physical redemption, spiritual redemption, and building a home where we come to God. So the Rav Schechter explains, the Geula means the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Atchalta de Geula is the founding of the state of Israel. A Sof Geula is the building of the Beit HaMikdash. And he held, obviously this is not, I don't, you know, I don't agree with this 100%. I follow other views, whatever. But Rav Schachter's view was that if you don't believe that Yom HaTzma'ut or Yom Yerushalayim is going to lead to Binyan Beit HaMikdash, you can't celebrate it. You're not allowed to say Hallel. You're not allowed to do anything because otherwise we're not allowed to add holidays. There's a prohibition in the Torah. You can't just add Yomim Tovim. I said Hallel this morning with the bracha. You know, how can you say this? So Norman Lamb, I think he was responding. Norman Lamb was there, gave a whole speech. He doesn't know anything about the gula. And he says, Shetehei Rishit Smicha Gula Teinu. So these are views that, great people can argue about. But I, you know, whatever history I think has taught us, I think the Rav Soloveitchik view is a much more better view to take. But please feel free to disagree with me. Okay, that's a little bit for Yom Yerushalayim, the Geula, Aramaic. Aramaic was the spoken language, apparently, in the land of Israel. But nonetheless, when rabbis spoke officially, when the rabbis officially spoke, they always spoke in Hebrew. So therefore, even in the Gemara, which the discussions are in Aramaic, look next time, you'll see the actual sayings, Abaye and Rabbah, what they actually said is actually Hebrew. They didn't say very much. In other words, they would make a one-sentence statement. They could have backwards and forwards. That's a questionnaire, etc. And of course, for this reason, the Rambam wrote only one book in Hebrew. The Rambam, everything the Rambam wrote was in Aramaic. Because he's writing for his time. The more Nevuchim, the guide to the perplexed of his time. People had this philosophical question, this problem. But the Ram, so he wrote in Arabic. Who in 100 years, no one's going to read that book. It's not for all time. But the Mishneh Torah, the constitution of the Jewish people, explaining the entire Torah, that you have to know for the future. The Rambam writes about the laws of the Messianic era, right? He writes about the laws of the sacrifice, the laws of building the Mikdash. It's in his law book, because the Rambam wasn't writing for his time. Unlike the Shulchan Aruch, was writing just for his time. The Rambam was writing for all times, and he included every aspect of Jewish law. The only one of the codes that did that. The Rif did not do that. The Tur did not do that. Shulchan Aruch did not do that. They didn't write about things that didn't apply in their time. The Rambam wrote about laws that were totally inapplicable because the Rambam saw this as a whole vision. This is the constitution of Jewish people. And therefore, he wrote it in Hebrew. So I write all my writings in English. That's 100 years. No one's going to look at my writings. 50 years. Who cares? Write in English. Not going to be any permanence. If you want to write permanence, got to write in Hebrew. It may not be 100% true, but it really is true. Anything that is not written in Hebrew will not make it into 100 years from now. But who knows? Anyways, okay, let's get back to our Mishnah. So we said Hillel is quoted. Let me find the Mishnah again. So Hillel is talking in Aramaic. Negad Shema Avad Shema. So what does that mean, Negad Shema? So basically, this Mishnah is to be very humble. What the mission is. That's, of course, who Hillel, was. Hillel is known to be the most humble of people. And of course, Hillel in many ways is the Moshe Rabbeinu of the Mishnah. In other words, he, according to the Gemara, he lived to be 120. It probably is inaccurate. It's not exact necessarily, but the Gemara wants to compare in many ways Hillel to Moshe Rabbeinu. Of course, we know the only trait that the Torah tells us about Moshe Rabbeinu was that he was humble. That's the only thing directly. We can figure out other things by reading all the stories of Moshe. But the only thing we're told is he was humble, and that's how the Gemara introduces Hillel. The famous three stories, the non-Jew on one foot, is preceded by the story, we should always be humble like Hillel, but don't be a captain, don't be like Shammai. And, you know, the story, they tried to make him angry and they couldn't make him angry. So Hillel says, Negad Shema Vishma. If somebody is interested in making their name known throughout the world, they'll lose their name. Their name will become, you're going to lose your name in the end. People who look for fame, it's not a good story. Now, I don't know, he's not necessarily saying a historical truth, although it very often is true. You know, very often people who only care about themselves, they may get away with it for 10, 20, 30 years, but we can all think of so many people who, you know, at the end, their arrogance really got the best of them. So that's what Hillel begins. Negad Shema Avad Shema. If you're concerned about your name, doing it for your personal benefit, you're going to lose your name. Delo Mosif Yasif. A person who doesn't learn will be finished. He doesn't add. A person who lo yosif, he doesn't add to his learning, yosif, that's the end of him, right? Halomei mikol adam, the idea of the constant growth. We know that the Rambam writes in Aseret Yemei Tshuva, so it says that, you know, in theory, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, even Yom Kippur, really, even Yom Kippur, is really only needed for the average person. The person who's a tzaddik, he gets inscribed for life right away. That's what the Gemara says, whatever this means. And the person who's a Rasha gets inscribed in the opposite book right away. The Beinonim wait in Aseret Yemei Tshuva. If they did tshuva, great. And if they didn't do tshuva, not so good. So you notice you have to do tshuva. If you do nothing, that's how the Bali Musar point out. Like, if you do tshuva, it's good. If you do nothing, it's not that if you sin. It should say, if you do mitzvot, you'll be good. And if you do aveirot, bad. That's not what it says. It says, if you do mitzvot, good. And if you do nothing, bad. Because doing nothing is regressing. There's no such thing as a person being on a stationary spiritual level. We're either going up or going down every single day. And that's why we put so much stress on daily learning, daf yomi, whatever, and on daily mitzvot, and every single day. There are no vacations in spiritual growth. Udelo yali, but a person who doesn't learn at all, ketalachayav, he's worthy of death. That's a fascinating idea. Whatever, we'll leave that you know, God created the world, so people should learn and grow. And of course, we know here he doesn't specify, but we know generally Torah refers to what we call, you know, in Torah, Jewish knowledge. And Chachma, wisdom, refers to general knowledge. The sciences is also part of Torah, of course, the world I come from. When you study physics, it's also Torah. It's a different type of Torah, but it's also there's Torah and Chachma. He's just saying in general, one who doesn't learn is worthy of death. Udishtamesh betag gachalav. So this I'll talk maybe a little more than the other ones, and briefly, one who uses the crown, dishtamesh betag gachalav, should be you know, wiped out. He'll go away. Why is that? In other words, the prohibition to use Torah for personal gain. So this is a major. It's a very hard idea, right? We all know that one is not allowed to get paid to do any mitzvah. We all know historically, until the Middle Ages, there was no such thing as a professional rabbinate. And we know, but already in the Gemara, they talk about the problem. You're not allowed to get paid for teaching Torah. Everybody knows that. I mentioned, I believe, a few weeks ago, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that today it's forbidden to teach Torah if you don't get paid. It's a fascinating, you know, how Rav Moshe turned it on its head, because he says, if like Rabbi Riskin quoted many years ago, if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. If you anything in life that you want, you have to pay for anything. Everybody pays for everything. You want good teachers, you got to pay for it. So, but it's the Rambam who's the most aggressive, I don't know if that's the right word, in his stance against people who take money for Torah. The Rambam writes, if you read the Rambam, you'll never give a cent to Kolel again in your life. I don't know that I would read the Rambam. You'll never, the Rambam is like, you lose your share in the world to come. Anybody who takes any money, a person who sits in Kolel, he destroys the world. The Chilul Hashem, boy, the Rambam goes on and on about this. All right. And by the way, that's why we know historically, that's why the Rambam became a doctor, because his brother supported him when he was learning, when he was younger. Then his brother drowned on a mission out at sea, and the Rambam didn't have a means of support, and he, of course, is not going to take any support for learning Torah. If a private individual, your family member, wants to give you, that's very different. He's talking about taking support of the public money. He's not talking on private money. So the Rambam became a doctor. He became a doctor, he became the world's best doctor, became the doctor to the Sultan in Egypt. It's interesting because halachically speaking, a doctor is not allowed to take money either, but because it's also a mitzvah. It's a Rav Shachter. Other people used to, I don't know if they're joking or serious, but you have to pay the rabbis and the doctors the same amount of of money because they're both involved in intrinsic mitzvot. They can't get paid. The difference is you're allowed to get money for treating a non-Jew. It's kind of like interest, the same way a non-Jew would charge you. But there is the Mishnah took a kardam lachbor ba. The idea that we should get personal benefit from anything in Torah was anathema to our sages. We learn Torah because it's the word of God. It teaches us how to be better people. It teaches us how to live our life. But that we should use it to earn a living, impossible. But already in the Talmud, they were where they had to pay the Kohanim. People had to live. I mean, they had to live. So they're, you know, either a schar batala, a person gets, or what do we have? That the Gemara has the idea of a schar batala means you could have done something else with. So instead of becoming a lawyer, we pay you for not becoming a lawyer, or on staka purpose. We mentioned it's the two ways to pay. But so there was an understanding, and then around the Middle Ages, a professional rabbinate emerges where you actually pay people. And of course today we, because it was a whole different system, obviously we have to pay teachers. That's what Rav Moshe is saying, that and if you don't pay people well, no one will go into the profession. Rav Moshe Feinstein even allows the teachers under extreme circumstances to go on strike. That's an amazing idea, because how can a teacher go on strike? You're not teaching any Torah, and you're not allowed to get paid anyways. You're not getting paid for teaching. You're not getting paid for not doing something else. But Rav Moshe basically says, "Eich lasot l'shem hefer Torah techa." It's a time to act for God. We've nullified your Torah. So sometimes the only way to get Torah going is to live, but you have to be mevatel Torah to be mekayim the Torah. Sometimes that's why all strikes are. The strike, you're doing something because you hope for the future. So that's a fascinating idea. Now, Rav Moshe says under rare circumstances, teachers can go on strike. He talks on unions, etc. I think Baruch Hashem in most schools, this is no longer applicable. Thank God the salaries as teachers, I think, are very good. I think teachers get paid very well. I'm a teacher. Maybe people don't like that I say this. I think we're paid extremely well. The problem is you're not paid. It costs too much money to go to day school. So we're not paid enough to support a family to go to day school. That's a problem. But but if compared to any other job, whatever. So that's but the shtamish betagachala. But the idea is to see Torah as a means for material benefit. Is a terrible thing, and that's it's a major issue today. How much salaries today? What's going on? You hear the heads of Jewish organizations are cutting their salaries 10%, 20%, 30%. What are they going to? This is not a simple issue. It's not a simple issue at all. And the Mishnah was very concerned about using Torah for our personal benefit. The other explanation that some of the Mefarshim say, "Dishtamish v'tagachal," is interesting. You're not allowed to, you shouldn't you should treat people who teach Torah with a certain respect. Don't use them for your own personal purposes. Like, don't let them do degrading work. Don't ask a Torah scholar to do something you could do, you should do. Now we know on the reverse end, the Torah scholar has to flee carcasses in the marketplace. I don't remember if I mentioned this last week, the famous Gemara, that you should be so much against taking in charity. A great Torah scholar, the Gadol Hador, the greatest Torah sage of the generation, should, if need be, should flee carcasses in the marketplace rather than to take money. That's from his perspective. We have an idea, say Shabbat Kachol Vatitz Tarek Libriyot. Make your Shabbos like a weekday and don't need people. In other words, in the time of the Gemara, people ate only two meals a day, or that was the custom. And then on Shabbat, you had to eat three meals a day. So it says, eat only, if you don't have enough money, don't ask for charity. Don't ask for charity. Eat two meals a day on Shabbat. I say Shabbat Kachol. It also means the meals on Shabbos are fancier. You'll eat whatever, herring or something. Eat something very inexpensive on Shabbos rather than to take staka. At the same time, people who are great Torah scholars, we shouldn't tell them to, you know, go to the store and pick up, run errands, take out the garbage for us, whatever. We should treat them with a certain respect. The Torah scholar in his house should take out the garbage, of course, but to him take out your garbage, that's a whole different story. But that's, anyways, Hillel is saying that we have to, don't worry about your name, do what's right, not to get a great name, do what's right because it's right. And you have to be constantly learning, and you can't try very hard not to do anything right for any personal benefit. That's almost next to impossible to do it on a whole, do it, you know, totally. Okay, next famous Mishnah we'll do a little quickly. Hu Haya Omer, continue with Hillel, famous Mishnah, Meina Lili Mili, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? Kishani Latzmi Mani, and I'm only for myself, who will be for me? So somebody quoted before Rabbi Shkup from Associated, right, as one of these great Torah scholars who, you know, took a job, you know, teaching, you know. So the Rav Shkup would talk at Associated, who I didn't know, of course, but so he was a maskil a little bit. He wasn't, I don't know the exact details, but he wasn't a traditional yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva, that's for sure. If anybody knew him in Toronto on there, you can fill me in on the details. His father, of course, was the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shimon Shkup, great, one of the great Rosh Yeshivas in pre-war Europe. And I believe in the introduction to his Sefer, Shar Yosher, he talks about this Gemara, about Imeina Lili Mili, and he talks about the importance of being a little bit selfish. I don't misunderstand it. I haven't seen it for a long, long time. It's just because you mentioned his name. Not being self, Imeina Lili Mili. I think he's talking about in the context of learning Torah. Hope somebody will get that phone soon. That somebody is learning Torah. And first you have to worry about yourself. Like on the airplane, you put the mask on yourself, then on other people. Imeina Lili Mili. And it's true in the economic sphere. It's true in every sphere in life. And that's the basis, really, of capitalism. Doing what you want for yourself will end up benefiting, you know, people. It's sort of the exact opposite of the last Mishnah. That's the Hillel talking the two sides of the coin. When it comes to Torah, nothing for your personal benefit. It's a terrible thing. Can't even take money, in theory. Now, Hillel's saying, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? Sort of the opposite idea. You got to worry about yourself. Got to do it for yourself because that's the only way you can grow. That's the way you can grow economically. It's the only way you can grow, you know, spiritually. There's a time in life where you want to become a great Torah scholar or great in anything. You don't have time to get involved in the community. You don't have time to worry about other people, to spend going out on missions and go on a Kiruv Shabbaton. That you can do later in life. So, Imeina Lili Mili, you got to be very, worry about yourself. We all know that. No one really cares. I don't want to say that. It sounds really not nice that nobody cares about us. But bottom line is, you know, except out of our family, you have people, and they're not bad people, but everybody looks out for, it's the nature of the world. You know, how many people now have lost their jobs? Have I given up half my salary? Like, there are people who are mamish, you know, it's a terrible thing. What can we, you know, there are limits. We can't, that's the way the world works. And so we do a little what we can, hopefully a little bit more than we can, a little bit more than we think we can. But he may not lili mili. Now, but of course there comes a point, kishani lasmi mani. And I would say this is a historical development. When you're younger, at a certain point, all everything you've got for yourself, now you have to share with others. It's not like, you could say they're at the same time, of course. I have to be on the one hand for myself. I have to balance myself and community. That's true, of course. But at the same time, you could say this is sort of a progression. When I'm younger, when I'm getting into something, I have to be very focused on myself. And then a little bit later in life, at a later stage in life, because Shani lost me money, then I've got to take what I've learned, gained for myself, whether it's money, wisdom, whatever it is, and share it with others. So it's a type of a progression in life, but imlo akshav ematai, right now. That's sort of, you know, that seems to be like at the same time, but I mean, you got to get working on it. Doesn't mean it's not a progression necessarily. Got to, you know, you can't, there always has to be some goal. Either I'm doing it to gain for myself, I'm doing it to help others. So that's one way of looking at the Mishnah. Rabbeinu Yonah, the great ethicist. Rabbeinu Yonah was, I believe, the brother-in-law of the Ramban. Brother and uncle, he was, I think he first was very much involved in the attacks on the Rambam, and then he was very upset. He did tshuva for all his attacks on the Rambam later. But Rabbeinu Yonah's comments often appear in the back of the Gemara, and certain of the Masechta, you have the comments of Rabbeinu Yonah. But he's famous for writing Shari Tshuva. I think that's what it's called. The famous book, read an Elulzman, on Tshuva. He was a great ethicist, in that sense, focusing on Musar, on self-improvement. These books sometimes are very hard to read. The Hebrew is English, easy to read. It means it's hard to incorporate. It's not often we don't like to read the Mesilat Yesharim, the most famous book of Musar, but the Ramchal, Ramosh Chamutzato. You read it, it's like, I don't see that in my ideal. He quotes what's the ideal life, which is the end of the Mishnah I just quoted in Sota, Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. That's his statement. That's the book, Mesilat Yesharim. It's a quote of the last, it's an explanation of the last Mishnah in Sota, the stages in life until you reach holiness, till you reach, come closer to God. Zrizut and Nikius and all these things. And he writes, there's a lot of things that in the modern world, it's hard to speak to us. But okay, we can talk about that some other time. But Rabbeinu Yonah also, they wrote on Tshuva lot. So he says, why am I telling you all this? Because Rabbeinu Yonah says, Imein Ani Limili is talking about being self-critical. You want to improve yourself in life. Musa, you got to be a better person. You know what? Nobody cares. But if you're not going to be self-critical about, and I'm talking in the spirit, we criticize people for all kinds of things, but usually not in order to make them better people, right? The first idea that a human being has to also always be self-reflective, self-reflective, and if I'm not going to look, and you know what? And if you don't care about yourself to self-criticize and self-improve, no one else is going to care. But when you're the Chafetz Chaim, and you're always looking to improve yourself, so that other people can help you also. They see that's what you care about. In other words, the problem with giving ethical chastisement, our generation, nobody likes Musar. Lingmar says, you're not allowed to tell people they're doing something wrong if you think they won't listen. It's like all of us. That's our generation. Already the Gemara says, already in their generation. It's very hard to give people Musar because people, you're the same way you have to speak what people will hear. You're not allowed to speak what they don't hear. But so if a person is receptive, he may not only immediately, if a person is receptive, then other people can help him grow because we can never see our own faults, right? That's a famous story they have. I don't know if it's true, of the Vilna Gaon and the Magid of Duvno. The Vilna Gaon went to the Magid of Duvno to give him Musar. So the Magid of Duvno told this whole story. Basically, he criticized the Vilna Gaon. It's very nice. You sit in the base medrash all day. What impact do you have? You don't deal with the community. Vilna Gaon had no communal position. He wasn't the rabbi. He wasn't the rishon. He was a private individual who, as Chaim Soloveitchik in his famous article points out, rupture and reconstruction. The Vilna Gaon really had no influence till 100 years after he died, 150 years after he died. The Vilna Gaon, his time, had no influence on Jewish halakha. Maybe the Hasidim, but he also was done without him. They were fighting the Hasidim without him. Later, today, he's much more influential. That's a fascinating development. In other words, so that was the Musar, the Magid of Duvna, because the Vilna Gaon asked him. That's what they say. I don't know if it's true. You can't sit in the cloister and in the base medrash all day. The base medrash has to influence and go out into the world. But anyway, so that's the Rabbeinu Yonah. He's not saying so. He's talking on a much more self-reflective thing. I just want to take a look at the comment. This relates to Psak Halacha. First part encourages halachic innovation. The second part is your face has to be based on precedent. Very interesting. That Imein Ani Limili means you have to be innovative in halacha, but you have to be concerned with how the halacha fits the community. Okay, that's an interesting point. There is something like that, that one of the rules of halacha is how it will be received. The same way you can't give Musar, there's a certain areas of halakha, we have halakha ve'en morim kin. You don't tell people about it because people won't understand it well. People won't listen to it, etc. Okay, so that's a little bit Hillel, the famous Mishnah. Let's do next Mishnah on Shammai. Shammai Amer, say Torah kva, make your Torah permanent. And more ma'ata, say harbe, say little, do a lot. And greet everybody with a smile, with a nice countenance. Sever panim yafot. Okay. Shammai. So I told you already, the Gemara says we should be like Hillel and not like Shammai. It's not such a nice thing to say. Lola, we should be like Hillel, don't be like Shammai. And then the Gemara ends that story. Hillel, the three people who went to convert, and Shammai threw them out, and Hillel brought them closer, says, because the three of these converts met. That's how the Talmud says, the three converts met. Said, Shammai, he would have rejected us. We wouldn't come under the wings of God. And thank God for Hillel. Because of Hillel, we're now Jewish, a wonderful life. We have a moral mission, etc. So like, whereas it's not so nice if you're Shammai. You know, it doesn't sound so great. But okay, we know. So I think that the last line I always think that Shammai was talking to himself, sort of what we said before. He may not only mean, you have to be self-critical. So Shammai says, having the Kabbalah kol adam b'sever panim yafot. You have to accept everybody with grace and a smile because he didn't do it. That Shammai knew. He knew he had a problem. Everybody, we often know we do things that aren't ideal. We can't help ourselves. We're human beings. So Shammai knew he had to work on this area. That's what I think. So Shammai's teaching, accept everybody, greet everybody with a smile and a beautiful countenance, because that's what, because he's talking to himself, he has to work on that more. Okay, asay Torah kakva, make your Torah permanent. So what does that mean? So simple explanation, got to learn every day, it should be the focus of your life. The permanence, you know, your job is temporary in this sense. There are other things in life. Torah has a permanence. Torah goes from generation to generation. Money's here today, gone tomorrow. So the permanence in life is Torah. And Torah doesn't just mean learning, I would interpret. And then it's broader sense. Our Torah should be our main focus of our life. Now, we know that the Rambam, you read this Rambam and you say, okay, very, very nice. Like, okay, where's he living? So the Rambam describes, remember, the Rambam says it's how forbidden it is to take money. The Rambam was like, oh my gosh, the worst thing in the world almost is to take money for learning Torah. So you have to work. So the Rambam gives you a schedule of the day. Everybody knows the Rambam's He slept 8 hours a day, right? Everybody knows that famous Rambam says to sleep. He didn't follow it himself. Believe me, the Rambam did not sleep 8 hours a day. And so the Rambam gives you a whole schedule of the day. So the Rambam says, okay, there's 16 hours a day left now after 8 hours of sleeping, and you got to eat. He has what to eat, what not to eat. He was a medical doctor. And then the Rambam says, okay, you have to go to work. So he says, okay. So you go to work for 3 hours a day, and you learn Torah for 9 hours a day. That's the balabas. The guy who's working works 3 hours a day, and he works 9 hours a day. It's 12 hours a day, and sleeping is 8 hours a day. It's 20 hours and 4 hours a day. Got to eat and, you know, talk to his family and whatever, do other things and read philosophy, whatever, do other things. So it's like, you read this, what, this is insane. What do you mean? Learn 9 hours a day, work 3 hours a day. We don't live in such a world. You can't make a living. There are some people have a lot of money, and you're supposed to work. We spoke last week, Yafet Talmud Torah Derekar, even if you have a lot of money, you're supposed to work. That's how the Mishnah for sure understood it. There's value to live only in the Torah world, not seeing the outside world. The Mishnah thought that was a bad thing, unrelated to monetary thing. But okay, so we can't make our Torah keva in a time sense, most people. That's not realistic. Most people are not cut out for it. It's not, they can't do it, even if they had all the time and all the money in the world. They just can't learn all day. Okay, Beseder. So I say Torah Chakva means the Torah in its broadest sense. Or I would say apply Torah. You know, we have an amazing halacha. You know, if you eat an orange at 9 o'clock in the morning, you make a Bor Pri Eitz. If you eat an orange again at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you make another Bor Pri Eitz, because the eating at 1 o'clock has nothing to do with the eating at 9 o'clock. You're hungry again. You have to make another bracha. But if I learn Torah, I get up, I daven in the morning, I say Birchas HaTorah, and then I don't learn Torah again until the evening. I go to work for 12 hours. I don't have no Mishnah, no nothing, no learning. And then I pick up a sefer. I go to a shir at night, 8 o'clock at night. Do I say Birchas HaTorah again? No, I don't say Birchas HaTorah again. I said it in the morning. So what? I said a Bor Pri Eitz in the morning. Well, what does that have to do with anything? You learn Torah. Whenever you learn Torah, you have to make a new bracha. New. If you ate an orange from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock, if you eat for 4 hours straight oranges, every half an hour, every 72 minutes, whatever it is, so you don't have to make another bracha. It's a continuing orange eating. But most people, when they eat at nine, eat at one, it's two different meals. But when you learn Torah, when you learn Torah at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you learn Torah at 8 o'clock at night, it's the same learning. Why is it the same learning? Because what'd you do in the middle? Because in the middle of the day, you did what I call applied Torah. There's theoretical physics, that's you open up the Gemara, you learn the whatever, learn the Gemara about the sun revolving around the earth, whatever Gemara you want to learn on physics, right? There's the theoretical Torah, and then there's the applied Torah. You go into the work world, you apply Torah, how to advertise, how to talk to people, how to price your object, on not to cheat people or not. There's so much halacha. We said the most halacha in the world of money. That's the biggest area of halacha. So that's also Torah. It's applied Torah. The Torah in the base medrash is theoretical Torah. And then I go out into the world, that's applied Torah. So it's one Torah. So therefore, when I come to learn at 8 o'clock at night, I've been learning Torah all day. So that's what we believe. That's what I believe as a Torah Mada Jew, one who believes in that everything is part of God's creation. That's everything is part of Torah. I said we were Chachma is also part of Torah. So when you're at work all day, if you see your work is totally divorced from your Torah, that's very sad. That's really sad. But if you see your work as an opportunity to sanctify the name of God, to apply the Torah you learn, that's a beautiful thing. You can be a lawyer, an investment banker, a social worker. I specifically didn't mention a doctor because that's doing a real, real, real mitzvah. But all of these are great mitzvot. And they're ways, they can be great mitzvot. They can be ways to enrich ourselves. Like we said before, I only care about myself, but they could be a way to help others. So that's one. I'll just say one last point and then we'll end. I see it's 10:27. Asay Torah Kakeva. So the Bart, I forget who says this, but make your Torah consistent. Not one Torah when you're on vacation in Florida and one in the summer and one in the winter and one when your neighbors are looking in shul and want to look. Your Torah should be consistent. Consistent. Rav Soloveitchik famously talks about, I don't know famously, but for me, talks about his grandfather, Rav Chaim, lived this life. He says most rabbis, they dressed one way when they're out in public, another way at home, and they put on their public demeanor was very different from their private demeanor. He didn't even think it was necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes we do. Of course we act differently at home than we do in public. Part of that is normal. But I guess he felt, Rav Chaim, he said, was such a Isha Met. His grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav Chaim was the exact same. He didn't daven longer at home, at private, public. Everything was the same. His religious growth, there was his religious, was a total consistency to it. So I remember you can think the interesting, how it should be. But say Torah Chakva, and more math to say, Arbe, do little, say little, do a lot. It's obvious. There's more to say, but that's don't talk too much. Like Avraham Avinu, do more than what you say you're going to do. But this, of course, is the teaching of Shammai, and greet everybody. And I'll just what we said in Havidana Kol Ha'adam Lekav Zchut. Same thing, Havidana Kol Ha'adam, except all man or the entire man. Ha'adam, the Sever Panim Yafot. Yeah, there are things we don't like about people. Everybody has traits we don't like. I say, but if you look at the whole person, look at the good things. Ha'adam, look in totality, so you can accept people with great grace and great love. Okay, just to do a quick review, we spoke about the Mishnah being in Aramaic, why it's in Aramaic, why Hillel is spoken in Aramaic, came from Babel. Important Mishnayot, they're talking about arrogance. Yikum Perkam, we're talking to the people, something very important you say it in Aramaic, but we spoke really Hebrew. Hebrew is the language of a permanence. It's a language of the Mishnah. It's even the language of the teachings of our sages in the Gemara. It's why the Rambam wrote his Mishnah Torah in Hebrew. And we quoted the Mishnah in Sota dealing with the Aramaic, dealing with the time of Mashiach. That interesting that also, that was also put into Aramaic, what the world would be like. Hopefully we're on the stage of Mashiach even, but we support Israel, we're Zionists, we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim, not some say only because we believe it's the beginning of the Ula, but some say no, it's independently unrelated to that. Then we spoke about Hillel's Mishnah in Aramaic, about not worrying about your name, people who do things for personal glory, using Torah for personal glory is a terrible thing. But on the other hand, you have to be for yourself, perhaps even in the level of Torah. Mainly, really at especially at a younger age in life, you want to grow into a Torah scholar, you have to focus on yourself so you will be able later on to spread that Torah to other people. The Torah should be the main focus of our life, whether that's actual Torah learning. Some people can merit that, but for most people, it means making how we are in the working world and our Torah should be of a permanent mitzvah. We shouldn't talk too much, and we should always smile and accept people, always be happy, always greet people. People are created in the image of God. So I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom, Yerushalayim. If you haven't registered for the Sunday program on medical ethics, really phenomenal program. Most of the people, by the way, registered are not doctors. Of course, we have a lot of doctors coming too. There's a lot of fascinating stuff, really a great speakers. Next week, by the way, next Friday is Shavuot. So please, God, I will be here on Thursday morning at 9:30, Erev Shavuos won't be on Pirkei Avot, although please God, we will continue Pirkei Avot, learn it through the summer. Please God, we'll talk next week. Did the Jewish people accept the Torah willingly or not? Not such a simple discussion. I think there's some interesting stuff there. So that will have our shiur, our Friday shiur will be moved to Thursday morning next week. And we have Doron Perez, the head of World Mizrahi, he's giving a shiur on Tuesday morning. Benny Gesundheit, who the Torontonian should know him, very fascinating, speaker. He'll be giving shiur on Wednesday, Birkat HaTorah and Shavuot. That'll be Wednesday morning. That's like Tuesday and Wednesday at 11 a.m. So we have lots. And please God, after Shavuos, we'll be continuing, adding some more new people. And I want to thank everybody for coming. A pleasure to learn with you. We tell me dai yoter mikulam. Having to teach Torah is the best way to learn Torah. And thank you all. And want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom. And thank